wait and let's let everyone get settled.
Plenty of time.
Okay, Ms. Milan.
Good morning, Your Honor. In this case, the district court made two fundamental errors. First, it misapplied the arbitrary and capricious Guidry standard. It applied deference not to an academic judgment, but to a billing decision, to a financial decision. Second, it treated the ANDS, and this is an open account statement, it treated the ADNS as dispositive and the sole contract, when under Louisiana law, an open account statement requires a separate underlying contract. It is, in essence, more like a line of credit than an agreement for services. We ask that the court reverse the district court's judgment and remand for further proceedings. Here, we ask the court to join the vast majority of courts who upheld all over the country in both circuit level and also the district court level that these types of college COVID tuition and fee cases do state a claim and should proceed past the pleading stage.
Let me ask you initially, why didn't Jones and Ellis receive any refund of the fees they paid if Tulane said they sent a 40% rebate to all students? Did that not happen?
I am not certain about the 40% rebate that Tulane sent, what it covered and what it did not cover. As we allege in the consolidated complaint, plaintiffs Jones and Ellis did not receive a refund for their tuition and also did not receive a refund for the fees that we are alleging.
Right. I understand the fees. I'm just curious about the tuition. All right. Well, I'll ask opposing counsel when it's their turn.
The arbitrary and capricious standard is applied in situations where the court gives a deciding party deference, where there is discretion in the terms of the contractual performance. Here, the students are challenging an academic decision by the school. They're instead challenging a billing decision. They're challenging Tulane's decision to continue to charge full price, full tuition and fees for Old A Park performance. When it closed down campus, canceled all in-person classes, and provided only some of those classes online.
Okay, what if they had said instead, we're just gonna keep having classes in person and y'all better come, then everybody died. Would that have been a better thing for them to have done?
Oh, no, absolutely. Not that.
So this isn't just some day they decided, it'd be more fun to do it online. We'll just do that. I mean, there was a pandemic.
Right.
Okay. How on earth is this unjust enrichment for Tulane to keep this money when they're having to pay the teachers, they're having to pay the IT guys, they're having to pay all kinds of things? How is that unjust enrichment?
Well, I think two points. First, it's important to keep in mind that the challenge here is not to Tulane's decision to move classes online. We actually think that that was probably the right move. It is instead Tulane's decision to keep all of the tuition and fees that were paid for an in-person experience when that was not provided. And second, as far as unjust enrichment, the unjust enrichment here is Tulane's billing decision to keep all of the fees and all of the tuition money. And in Louisiana, for an unjust enrichment claim, restitution is given not to the extent that Tulane was unfairly enriched, but instead the value of what the students paid for versus what they were provided. It measures the student's detriment, not Tulane's unfair enrichment.
But wouldn't the students have had a much greater detriment if they were made to come in person at that point in the pandemic? At the height of it, before there was any vaccination, and they didn't have masks?
that situation just did not occur here. The students have suffered a financial detriment, and that is something that the law does afford a remedy. I do think that Tulane made the right call by moving classes online. The question is, when they had canceled all laboratories, for instance, could they, under the contract, still charge students 100% tuition and fees for those services that they never gave?
As I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just asking the question, you point to the fact that initially the fees were set lower for classes that were always going to be online?
Correct. Correct. And
So you reason from that it costs the university less to provide online courses? Again, I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'm just asking for your position.
That is one way to put it. Another way to put it is to look at the market price. The market price for in-person education is higher than for online education. When students paid the very high tuition and fees to Tulane, they were paying for something. They were paying for in-person classes.
But were these classes available online before the pandemic?
The record does not state that. I do know that—
Does that matter? The fact that some other class might have been cheaper online, does it matter to this, that these classes weren't even available online and wouldn't have been cheaper online?
I think that goes to the question regarding determination of damages and also to the weight of the evidence. In Gosiman versus Loyola.
Your allegation is because in some other bucket they charge less for online, that means that it's always less. And I'm asking about that.
Right. It bears upon the reasonable expectation that by paying for the full tuition and fees, for the full in-person tuition and fees, that they were going to get full in-person education and experience. These students could have elected to go to an online school. They could have elected to register to Tulane's online programs. They decided not to.
But was this area online? That's what I'm saying. I was a little bit unclear from the briefing on this.
I think I'm not clear on the question then.
Could they have taken these courses online, the same courses that they didn't get in person? And is there a representation of what the cost would be? And apparently not. Apparently there was only one case.
One course. Right. The record is not clear as to the plaintiff's specific courses, whether those specific courses had online versions in the normal course. With one of the plaintiffs, two of his classes were canceled altogether. They were not provided in person. They also were not provided remotely. They were instead provided in the self-study format. That indicates to me that perhaps they were never, there was not an existing online option for those courses.
So you're appealing the dismissal on the pleadings. If we were to agree with you, I don't mean to suggest we will or we won't agree with you, but if we were to agree with you, then I assume that the case would go back for factual development, either to the summary judgment stage or to and with discovery or to trial, so that some of these facts could be fleshed out.
Yes, Your Honor. Another matter that I think is important to remember: pandemics like COVID-19 have happened in the past. They may be new to us, but they're not new to contract law. And Louisiana has very specific laws regarding how to treat a contract that may become impossible to perform because of an unforeseen event like a pandemic. And the process is to return the parties as closely as possible to a position of fairness. And not give one party the full contract benefits for only partial performance. And that's what we're seeking here. I understand the point that this was a worldwide pandemic that really affected Tulane's ability to give these educational services. However, the solution is not to just keep all of those tuition and fees. Under Louisiana law, what is required instead is for Tulane to return the value between the in-person services that were promised versus the online services that were instead given. Here, we have some evidence regarding how Tulane charged less for online education. In some situations, it charged as much as 4 times less. And that is just the beginning of our proof regarding damages. It's not going to be the only proof. But right now, at the pleading stage, without the benefit of discovery, what all we need to do is to be able to allege facts sufficient to make a claim for an express or an implied contract, an unjust enrichment. And we believe that we did so. And here, I think it's notable that courts throughout the country almost universally have agreed that schools, though they were in a tough situation because of the pandemic, they have agreed that students, yes, do have a potential contract claim, at least one that should be able to go to discovery and to be fleshed out on the facts.
But Louisiana law is a bit different in some instances, and that's the argument here, that it's not really relevant what happened in the Seventh Circuit, it's relevant what's happening in Louisiana, so tell me about that.
Correct. In Louisiana, I think that the key civil code provisions here are Louisiana Civil Code Articles 2018, 1877, and 1878. And these are summarized at the reply brief at pages 24 and 25. In Louisiana, when an unanticipated event prevents the performance of a contract, the procedure is to return back the value of what was provided versus what was promised. So here it would be the value of the in-person classes and services that they paid for versus the online classes and services that they received.
Is it irrelevant that they got the same credit?
Students here paid for the entire educational experience, not just for credits. They paid for the classroom interaction.
So you're saying it is irrelevant?
It is. I think that it would be a much stronger case if they did not receive any credits, but were still charged full tuition. But just giving credits alone is not enough. The university educational system is not one where you just pay money and receive credits in return. It's also to receive the educational opportunities, the networking, the give and take and the dialogue and the interaction with your professors. And that is what they were missing during these COVID years. Also, Tulane, for the past 170 years, has provided classes in person. It is largely an in-person institution. Under Louisiana law, when a party wants to change its performance from what it customarily provided, that change must be in writing. And here, there was not. And here I point you to the reply brief at pages 13 and 14, the decision of Kenner. Louisiana cases looking at a breach of contract by schools, I think is It can be very elusive. I mean, excuse me. Illustrates our point. Perhaps even the best case is the Patino case. This was decided in 2016, which is after the Guidry case. Here, the school decided to downsize its Spanish program after Hurricane Katrina. The court held that the school was still liable to pay on the teacher's employment contract, even though it had downsized that program.
Your initial time has expired, Ms. Golan. You've saved time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. James Garner from Cher Garner for the administrators of the Tulane Educational Fund.
Mr. Garner, what is the situation with whether these plaintiffs, Jones and Ellis, received refunds of either tuition or fees?
Tuition was not refunded. Room, board, and recreational fees were refunded. And remember, the contracted issue says fees are never refunded. That's a provision in the agreement and disbursement statement.
Now, you answered my question indirectly, and I appreciate that. So is that in the record, or are you answering my question as a
page
for the court?
Yeah. Page 499 to 500 is the agreement and disbursement statement.
No, I'm not asking you about.
I do not, sitting here today, and I hate to do this given I teach appellate law at Tulane Law School, I have to go find where that's in the record. I can't tell you where that's in the record, what we refunded.
All right. So that would be one thing. If we decided that dismissal on the pleadings was inappropriate, that's one of the facts that would be established either by stipulation or by some kind of process of adversarial testing. Is that right?
We could establish that by stipulation. However, I think it's irrelevant to sending it back because of the uniqueness Judge Haynes pointed out of Louisiana law. What standard we're talking about.
The reason to send it back is we don't have any facts here except what are alleged, and we take those as they're pled.
But they never pled. It was arbitrary, capricious, or in bad faith, going back to the 1956 Louisiana Supreme Court case, Cal Chauvin versus Loyola University. On page 36 of that decision, the Louisiana Supreme Court said the decision of Loyola not to pay the salary of a professor was neither arbitrary, capricious, or in bad faith. That case law has been borne out in Mills versus Tarver recently, December 30th, 2021, and in the Guidry case, and in the other cases we cite to your court, to your honors, particularly Miller versus Loyola. I did, with your indulgence, before I get into my argument, wanted to answer Judge Haynes in your question about what we do know from the pleadings. And if you look at page 10 of the reply brief and the record on appeal at 733, as well as record on appeal where they cite in at page 30, the classes, Judge Haynes, were never online for what happened here. It was a different product. For those familiar with Tulane University, there's a school of professional advancement. When I was at Tulane, known as University College, it's open enrollment. Any mom and pop, it's really for the moms and pops of the city, retired servicemen, retirees to go. You don't have to have a 35 and straight A's on your ACT to get in. And if you look at their brief, they even plead for the school of professional advancement. The online price is exactly the same is the in-person price. And for the law school, and you can look at the catalog, their pleadings and their briefs and figure this out. In the catalog under your Collins versus Morgan Stanley case, Judge Smith, where you said you can look at documents beyond the complaint. If they're central to the complaint and put at issue, they put it at issue. The law school never taught online classes prior to this decision.
So, suppose hypothetically that on March 13th,
plus or minus.
Within a few days of March 13th, Tulane had said all in-person classes are canceled. There will be no online classes. We hereby award you the full credit for whatever course it is that you were taking on March 13th. Would that pass muster under Louisiana law?
It would not. If they said we're not going to deliver any product, and we're just going to give you a diploma. Judge Terry Love in the Fourth Circuit, Miller versus Loyola, addressed that and said specifically that's where the courts could go after a school when they didn't deliver the product at all. It comes back, and I think I heard Judge Haynes say it. We're faced with a decision. Do we help Mr. Ellis get his diploma in May of 2020, which he received, right? Do we help all these young kids continue to advance their educational life in the midst of a worldwide pandemic of which there was never an identifiable contractual promise? I didn't get there yet, but I will get there. Or do we do what you just suggested, Judge Smith, which is not the facts, but that they could plead was arbitrary and capricious and in bad faith. Tulane just couldn't stop one day and quit performing. But that's not the facts. The facts are Tulane did perform. Mr. Ellis did get his diploma, and Ms. Jones got her educational credits.
Suppose instead of, let's pursue the hypothetical a little further, suppose that instead of saying we're going to have online classes where you can go to your computer or your handheld device and see the course being taught, that we're just going to send you a bunch of written material so that we're converting this to a correspondence, what we used to call a correspondence course, but you still get your full course credit. Would that pass muster?
You're getting a step closer to arbitrary and capricious in bad faith. And remember, in this case, what they pled was, and it's paragraphs, give me one second, you're getting me ahead in my outline. They pled, with your indulgence, let me get there. They pled it was warranted under the circumstances. What Tulane did complied with the laws of the state of Louisiana and the parish of Orleans, and that we complied with health standards. So I think in this case, we'll talk about hypothetical in a second, but indulge me. In this case, they pled everything Tulane did was reasonable. Not that reasonable is the standard, was reasonable. When they have to plead, and remember, they got two bites at the apple in pleadings here. There was a first complaint for both sides, and there was a consolidated complaint. They saw our first motion to dismiss, where we said arbitrary, capricious, and in bad faith, which Louisiana is, like we tend to be, on an island of its own in this jurisprudence. The Seventh Circuit does not address that issue in Gotchman. Dean didn't need to deal with it even when they affirmed, and none of the wave of cases against us deal with the arbitrary, capricious, and in bad faith standard.
Does Tulane take the position that the online teaching between mid-March and the end of the semester was as valuable to the individual student as the in-person instruction would have been?
That's a great question, because as we know, going back to Justice Frankfurter in the Sweezy case in 1957, you, and I say this with all due respect, because you're Article III robed judges of the Fifth Circuit, it's not the court's job to get into valuing the education. I think Tulane takes the position, I know, we did the best we could.
Okay. I don't really care whether you think it's our job or not. I'm asking you the question. Does Tulane take the position? You heard my question.
I heard your question. I'll answer it this way.
I'm going to repeat it so that this time you're going to answer it.
Okay.
Does Tulane take the position that the online instruction from mid-March to the end of the semester was as valuable to the individual respective student as the in-person instruction and presence on the campus would have been?
Yes, because Mr. Ellis got his diploma, and that's what he came to a top 50 university. The answer is yes.
Well, then we get back to my first hypothetical, which is all courses are canceled. We're not doing online or correspondence courses, but you get your credit. You just told me that getting the course credit means that the entire thing was just as valuable as it would have been otherwise. That's what you just told me.
When we performed. In your first hypothetical, Tulane stopped performing.
You just said that this plaintiff got the full course credit toward a diploma.
And your question was conditioned, with all due respect, on us continuing to perform in an online manner versus not performing at all, which I think is a distinction with a real difference, Judge.
So you're saying he didn't just get the diploma, he also got the learning.
Yes. I'm sorry, you did it better than me.
And I'm not trying to speak for Judge Smith, so I'll just add my corollary to it. Was it the same value, given the circumstances, that to go in person they would have a very decent chance of dying or getting very sick, versus online they stayed well and learned the same thing? Does that matter?
Yes, ma'am, it does, and I think the answer is absolutely yes. Under these circumstances, in a worldwide pandemic, when we continued to perform to produce the ultimate product, we just didn't give it away, right? And one of your
hypotheses. Learn the information, that's the question.
Correct.
You're learning X, Y, Z, but the pandemic hit before Z, then the question is, were they taught Z?
Yes, they were taught Z under reality, under what happened. And I think that's an important distinction, Judge Haynes. Thank you for pointing that out. But whether we can back, I'm going to respectfully submit, Louisiana has been crystal clear on educational malpractice, and the Miller case in particular, that courts should not be valuing the education judge. And I say that with all due respect.
Are you reading the claim here as a claim for educational malpractice?
Yeah, because we heard it today. It's not the same value. It's not the same thing. And as I was going to quote Justice Frankfurter in my argument, Justice Frankfurter in Sweezy versus New Hampshire, 354 U.S. 234, pointed out there's four essential academic freedoms of a university under the First Amendment. Okay, once again, it's 354 U.S. 234, 1957, to determine for itself on academic grounds who may teach, what may be taught. The third one goes to what Judge Haynes has been talking about, how it shall be taught, and who may be admitted to study. This was a question of modality, which, remember, the district court, Louisiana law is similar in one way to other jurisdictions. You have to have an identifiable promise in an express contract or established by unequivocal circumstances to be an implied contract. Judge Guidry gave them the benefit of the doubt. He said, you have that promise. But Louisiana goes that step further. Because of what Justice Frankfurter talks about in Sweezy, because of the academic freedoms, because of roles of courts should not be questioning whether we should be teaching and how we should be teaching in the midst of a worldwide pandemic, is it arbitrary, capricious, and in bad faith? They pled the opposite. They never pled it was. And that's why this case is unique compared to the other jurisdictions.
Let me ask you about the unjust enrichment. Your opponent said that as long as they didn't get what they were hoping to get, then that's unjust enrichment, even if you all didn't gain anything more. Do you agree with that?
I do not. I do not because
it's been— Can you explain your view on that?
Yeah. First of all, Louisiana law is clear. Once there's a contract, you cannot have—Louisiana is not like the Schaefer case out of the D.C. Circuit, or even like Gotchman out of the Seventh Circuit. Louisiana law, once again, is different here. Once you have a contract in dispute, which is a law remedy, right, a remedy at law, you cannot have unjust enrichment, number one, right? So legally, they can't have it under Louisiana law, and that's 100 years old of Louisiana Supreme Court jurisprudence. Secondly, they didn't get impoverished. They got, as you pointed out, and I appreciate it, they got the learning, they got the credits, they got the degree. Tulane had a full faculty on board.
But if we, so you're saying regardless though, as long as there's a contract and you're not disputing that there is with these people.
Correct.
And we just don't reach the issue of unjust enrichment.
Yes, ma'am.
But if we did reach it somehow, we concluded there wasn't a contract or arguably there wasn't, then if they're saying we didn't get what we expected, then that can prove unjust enrichment. It doesn't matter if you all lost more money you still may have to pay them back?
I say no, because reasonable expectations are irrelevant in Louisiana because of the arbitrary, capricious, and bad faith standard.
And then what about conversion? What is your response to the notion that by keeping the money when you're not giving what they wanted, it's conversion?
My first answer to that is always, it was not arbitrary, capricious, and bad faith, number one. Number two, we delivered the learning, correct? We delivered the learning, we delivered the credits, we delivered the diploma, and they ratified it. They didn't drop out. No plaintiff pleads, once you switch to online learning, I quit. Tulane, I quit, I didn't get the benefit of the learning, I didn't get the credits, I didn't get anything, and you kept my money. Nobody pleads that. They ratified it. And there's case law we cite in our papers about ratification. Once you ratify it, it can't be conversion.
To what extent does Tulane's position depend on the existence of the agreement and disclosure statement? And it's a double question. To the extent that you do or you don't, what do we know about whether students actually signed that agreement? Those are two separate questions.
And I'll ask both of them. Give me 2 seconds, because I brought the documents anticipating that question, Judge. All right. The agreement disclosure statement is in the record at 499 and 500. Our position, it clearly applies and governs. It is, one, you don't get a transcript, you can't register, you can't get a diploma unless you comply with this agreement and pay the tuition, and that's in the contract, number one. Number two, tuition refunds, or second to last paragraph on page 499 of the record, tuition refunds are expressly addressed in how you get a refund. And how you get a refund is you have to drop the class timely, and you have to...
So you've answered the first part of my question.
Okay.
I appreciate that, which is, yes, Tulane relies on the existence of that agreement for its legal position here. So the second part of the question is, what can we know about whether the students, particularly these two students, signed the agreement?
If you look in the record, at 552 through, give me 2 seconds, 555, and they look like this. It's their registration to register, okay? And it says right here, confirm to register. I don't want to get under the light on my glasses. I accept academic and financial obligations for counsel requested in accordance with the terms and conditions of the Tulane University accounts receivable agreement and disclosure form. So you can't register unless you confirm you're agreeing to it. And that's once again in the record starting at 552 through 555. Did I answer your question, Judge?
Do you have any other argument to make?
Not really. I mean, we ask you, let me just sum up then. Please affirm. We ask you to do a review to go further than the district court to conclude there was no identifiable promise, there was no implied promise at all, period. And if there was, if you proceed like the district court did in assuming it, they never plead, Judge, despite two cracks at it. They never plead it was arbitrary, capricious, or in bad faith, which has been Louisiana law since 1956. As always, it's an honor and privilege to be here. Thank you for your questions.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Garner. And Ms. Golan, you've saved some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So what do you do with the assertion that you're dead in the water because you did not plead that this was arbitrary and capricious?
Well, we don't need to plead that it's arbitrary and capricious. The arbitrary and capricious standard only applies to academic judgments. And Tulane has already admitted that its decision to charge full freight for its online courses, that's not an academic decision. That's a matter of a billing decision. That is not afforded deference.
But isn't online versus in-person an academic decision?
It could be, but in this case, Tulane made that decision not for any academic justification or using academic judgment, but instead to comply with safety.
Well, it could have made the academic decision to just end that semester and start over the next year, right? It made the academic decision to continue the classes.
If they had made an academic decision, had that been an academic decision, even under Louisiana courts, they're still bound by the contractual consequences of that decision. Just like the academic decision to downsize the Spanish program after Hurricane Katrina, that was a good faith academic decision. However, the school is still on the hook to pay the employment contracts for those teachers. In another case involving payment of a tutor, the school made the decision that the tutoring sessions should end following a student's mental health evaluation. That was an academic decision, and it was made in good faith. However, the Louisiana court in Loop held that the school is still on the hook contractually to pay for that tutor's employment contract.
How would you calculate damages if it's reversed and remanded if there are no comparable online cases compared to the in-person cases? How do you?
Well, despite opposing counsel's assertions to the contrary, Tulane did charge less for online classes. We would use that as part of evidence. And this is in the reply.
Are they the same courses?
As far as we can tell, yes. And if you look at the reply brief at page 10, it states there, for instance, that certain classes in the law classes mm-hmm. for the online law program, those are charged much less.
These are undergraduate students, aren't they?
We have one undergraduate student and one business student.
Not law.
And not a law student.
Do you have proof if we sent this back of these classes, not a class, but these particular classes that your clients were taking?
Here the record doesn't indicate. However, there is in other similar cases, and what we would do here is we would use the an economist expertise that would look at the market for in-person classes and the market for online classes, and across the board, generally speaking, online classes cost significantly less than in-person classes. And then we can also use other analyses like contract.
So would you compare what an online class post-pandemic would look like compared to an in-person class post-pandemic?
We can also look at—
In other words, that you would all be showing up in a class while this pandemic is raging versus being able to do it online. Would you be looking at that difference?
We can also look at that as well. We would be trying to control for all of those types of variables. I would also note that—
It's fascinating, actually.
Yes, I think it would be. And it's also key to note that in some schools, they continue to offer in-person classes through the pandemic. There are certain ways in which they could provide in-person components safely, whether it's through physical distancing or masking requirements.
Did that happen in Louisiana?
The record indicates that no, it did not happen at Tulane. I'm asking
in Louisiana.
I am not certain.
Were there online classes in April of 2020 at colleges in Louisiana?
I am not certain. The record doesn't indicate. I see my time is up.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Golan. Your case and all of today's cases are under submission, and the court is in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow.